From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, leaders of three good government groups say New York Governor Cuomo isn't doing enough to address Albany's chronic corruption problem. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on that accusation, and the state's Joint Senate Task Force on Heroin and Opioid Addiction has kicked off a series of statewide forums. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Call by government reform groups for an open leaders meeting on ethics reform turned into a spat between Governor Cuomo and the groups themselves, including the League of Women Voters. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt was there and filed this report.
The New York public interest research group Citizens Union and others are calling for ending the long Albany tradition of closed-door meetings between the governor and legislative leaders, where they make all major decisions on the budget and other issues. It's known as three men in a room. The groups want a meeting open to the public to discuss ethics reform. Blair Horner is with NYPIRG.
All we're asking is for an open leaders meeting on ethics because that's the way we think a better deal will get done. This is a well-trod path of secret negotiation around ethics with an unsatisfying resolution. Let's try openness.
The groups are seeking major changes in the wake of the arrest and conviction of the two majority party legislative leaders, including banning or strictly limiting outside income and closing loopholes in the campaign finance system that allow for unlimited contributions in some cases. Dick Dady with Citizens Union says the current system, with its unrestricted outside income for lawmakers, is ripe for continued corruption.
If we wanted to design the perfect system for corruption as it relates to legislative compensation, we have it. We pay our legislators too little. We haven't given them a raise in, 18 years?
There is a new pay commission enacted last year that may decide on issuing more regular salary increases. Until less than a year ago, there was no oversight of how lawmakers used or misused the per diem expense payments they receive while in Albany. And the groups say they are too dependent on collecting campaign cash with few restrictions on how it is spent. Barbara Bartoletti with the League of Women Voters says proposals for fixes aren't new.
This isn't rocket science. I mean, we know how to do this. We've given them recommendations after recommendations. So it's not as if they don't know how to do this. They do know how to do it. It is the political will that they lack.
The governor, who spent little time lately at the Capitol, was holding events in New York City and Long Island instead. Cuomo, who's also been traveling around the state to campaign for the $15 minimum wage, has said ethics reform does remain a top priority for him.
I don't know how I could have been any louder on ethics than I was in my state of the state.
In response to the call for an open leaders meeting, a spokesman for the governor did not address the question of whether the meeting would be open or closed, saying instead ethics and campaign finance reform will be discussed. The spokesman for Cuomo, Rich Azzopardi, then attacked the reform groups themselves, saying the governor wants greater disclosure of their donors and questioning whether the groups themselves are shadow lobbyists. Bartoletti with the League of Women Voters is a volunteer. She's not paid for her work. She responds to the charge, though, admitting freely that she belongs to a front group.
We're a front group for voters. Well, the voters right now, I think 90% in the last survey, they're saying get this ethics reform done.
And she says information on the League's donors, which consist mainly of its board members, is easily available. Horner with NYPIRG says he's fine with more disclosure and will comply with any new rules that the governor and legislative leaders agree to. If open leaders meetings are to be held, there would be at least one eager participant. The leader of the Senate Democrats, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, says she'll be there.
Ethics is certainly important, and I'd be more than happy to have an open leaders meeting on that and anything else, because I think the more voices we get to the table and the more transparency, the better the outcome.
Democrats are in the minority in the Senate, though, and they've traditionally been shut out of the closed-door meetings, which normally only include the majority party legislative leaders. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
A new Siena College poll shows that if the New York primary was held today, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton would handily defeat their opponents. More from WAMC's Dave Lucas.
The two presidential candidates with strong ties to New York make a strong showing in the survey released Monday. Democrat Hillary Clinton remained 21 points ahead of Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. At 55-34%, the numbers haven't changed since last month's Siena poll. Siena pollster Steve Greenberg.
The one break we see on the Democratic side more than anything else is an age break, and with something we've seen nationally. Voters under 35, they're with Bernie by a margin of 57-40%. However, the more reliable voters historically have been those older voters. And among voters 55 and older, Hillary Clinton has a commanding 64-25% lead.
The poll shows that either Clinton or Sanders, who is from Brooklyn, would defeat any Republican opponent in a hypothetical general election.
Hillary Clinton would beat Donald Trump by 23 points, 57-34%.
Local historian and former state assemblyman Jack McEnany predicts Clinton will take New York.
I think the thing with Mrs. Clinton is that she was our senator for a number of years and has a very wide a sense of knowledge of the state. A lot of people know her personally, so it wouldn't surprise me any more than it would surprise me with Bernie Sanders carrying Vermont against anybody, that hopefully these are the people that know you best and will deliver accordingly. As far as the final vote, I don't see the state going Republican under any circumstances.
Republican frontrunner Trump's support has surged to almost 50% in his home state.
Nearly half of Republicans say they are supporting Trump in the primary. 45% support Trump, tied for second place, but a distant second place, Marco Rubio and John Kasich, who both have the support of 18% of Republicans.
Ted Cruz holds second place in the Republican delegate count, but lags behind Trump in New York by 34 percentage points. Former Albany County Republican Committee Chair Don Clary tells News Channel 13 that he hasn't seen such a close race this late since the 1976 primary with Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan.
The year that sticks in my mind as being the most contentious and exciting, and Ford won it on the convention floor.
As New York's April 19th primary day draws closer, Greenberg reminds us nothing in politics is written in stone.
We have Michigan, we have Ohio, we have Florida, we have a lot of major states between now and then. Could Clinton wrap it up? Could Trump wrap it up? Certainly possible, but 6 weeks, don't know. New York very much may be in place still in one or both parties.
The Siena poll was conducted February 28th through March 3rd by telephone calls conducted in English to 800 New York registered voters, including 368 Democrats and 229 Republicans. It has an overall margin of error of plus or minus 4.1 percentage points. New Yorkers who want to vote in the primary must register to vote by March 25th and can do so through the Department of Motor Vehicles website. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You spoke with Republican Assemblyman Jim Todisco yesterday about the presidential race and who he would support. And, well, there wasn't an answer, really.
Not really. And I have to tell you, this is a very tough thing for a lot of Republicans. And I'll tell you why. Because there are not an awful lot of attractive candidates here. You know, many of them think that if you support Trump, it's irresponsible. If you support Cruz, he's too far to the right. Rubio seems to be the establishment candidate, but out of it. So where are you going to go? It's a very tough situation for a lot of Republican policymakers, especially those in a state like New York or Massachusetts, because if you choose wrong at a time like this, the implications for your own future could be quite severe.
Let's stick with the Jim Todisco for a second. You also talked about truth in spending bill, the murky waters of the legislature and the monies that get spent on pork.
Well, look, we know that there has to be an accountability on the part of politicians if you're going to have an effective democracy, because you can't have democracy unless you have information. Todisco, for years, has been in the minority, the deep minority in Republican politics in the state legislature. Is he invited into the room when the pork is distributed? No. Does he have anything to lose by saying there should be transparency? No. He's right, of course, there should. And one of the questions I keep asking him is, okay, when you guys get into the majority, if that ever happens, and right now it doesn't look like it will, if it ever happens, will you change your tune? We say, okay, well, we were out in the wilderness all these years. Now they have to suffer, and we're not going to tell them anything either. And he always says, no, no, no. But, you know, I've been around politicians for a long time. I like Jim Todisco a lot. And he certainly is right in his position on transparency and the three people in the room, the three men in the room. Nevertheless, I'm from Missouri, you know, not really, but you got to show me.
Well, and Todisco was standing in the room as good government groups, Blair Horner from NYPIRG, the League of Women Voters, and Citizens Union called on the governor and legislative leaders to push and pass ethics reform.
Well, look, they all make the right noises. So we all have come to know about Andrew Cuomo. He says one thing and often doesn't sort of follow through or does an opposite. He did that when he said he was going to not allow them to draw their own districts anymore, but they do. He did it when he started a Moreland Act commission and then disbanded it, you know, on ethics. He did it when he said he was going to support Democrats and take the state Senate back. And he has hardly really worked hard at that either. And so it is easy to say we're all for ethics. But what does the state legislature do? The Democrats in the assembly who are talking about ethics, and Preet Bharara, by the way, said that unless you're really supportive of ethics reform, then you're enablers. You're basically ceding power to the old way. So what do the Democrats do to get back to the subject? They take the boss of the Bronx and make him the boss of the assembly. Speaker Hastie now, you know, what? That shows you that you're committed to ethics reform? That you're going to find some leadership who are going to lead you out of the wilderness? Nah. So far, it's all been talk. Let's see if they actually do anything.
Speaking of doing something, infrastructure, Alan, big issues with water now. We not only see the area of Hoosick Falls with the chemical PFOA now in Petersburg and over the line into Bennington County, Vermont, as well as issues of lead in Binghamton in the water and more. And U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer wants a $100 million federal grant for schools to test their water for unsafe levels. But as you and Todisco talked about this week, a lot of this has to do with that infrastructure.
Well, that's right. Remember, we've talked about this before, but I want to make it clear. Some of these pipes were put under the ground in, you know, this post-Civil War or during the Civil War, or right after the Civil War. Think about that. Those pipes have been in the ground since the 1850s, 1860s. That's terrible. We have new technologies. We have new things that get into the water. And so either we're going to face up to this or we're not. You know, we give a great deal of money to foreign affairs and foreign policy and to our military. So are we going to pay attention now? Should we? Are you kidding? Do you have any idea what lead can do to children? And lead contamination, we say that, you know, if you got lead in your walls in a New York City apartment, you got to do something about it. You can't let the kids have access to it and chewing on it. And so if we bury our heads in the sand, as we do with climate change and so many other things, and say, we're not going to do anything, we really are making a mistake. To say the least, you know, some of Tedisco and others have talked about the fact that our roads are collapsing because what's underneath the roads are collapsing.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
New York's Joint Senate Task Force on Heroin and Opioid Addiction recently kicked off a series of statewide forums. One of the co-chairs continues to push for a number of reforms he called for last year. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
The night before State Senator Terrence Murphy of Yorktown was scheduled to begin the forums, he attended a wake for a 26-year-old man in his town who died from an overdose. The next day, he co-hosted forums in Oneonta and Penn Yan, and later in the week in New York City. He says themes from last year are the focus once again.
And the stories that you hear, it is all about insurance reform and treatment.
It's something the freshman senator urged last year when he unveiled a 7-point plan, and he intends to push for changes in this area again this year.
15 days is a joke. These insurance companies got to step up to the plate. And they've got to, you know, to allow someone to go in and have 15 days of treatment and then be reevaluated and say, well, you're doing pretty good. Get out. And then the recidivism of that is just, you know, over 90%. So we need to fund treatment for these people and get them a second chance in life.
Democratic Assemblyman James Skoufis agrees.
Part of it is making sure that OASIS, the Office of Alcohol and Substance Abuse here in New York, is properly funded. We're debating that amongst many other items in this year's budget process. I believe that we need to build off of what the governor has proposed for OASIS. Yeah, I think he's proposed a 1-2% increase over last year, and we could do more than that.
The Orange County Assemblyman also supports Murphy's call to crack down on dealers. Both are co-sponsors of bills to allow a heroin or opioid dealer to face a homicide charge. Here's Skoufis.
We need to do more to get the criminals who are dealing these drugs off of the street. And there is a bill that I'm a co-sponsor of in the Assembly. I'm very supportive of, and Senator Murphy is, I believe, supportive of, that would effectively establish a new crime and be able to charge these drug dealers homicide when the buyer of whatever they're selling overdoses.
Again, Murphy.
It is an absolute epidemic. You have really good people that are getting hooked.
Murphy says one part of his plan did come to fruition when last year the State Board of Regents approved regulations to allow naloxone or Narcan, a medication that can reverse the effects of an opioid overdose, on school grounds.
Every school nurse in New York State has the ability to get certified and allow the kit to be within their nurse on school grounds. And could you imagine, it was illegal for them to administer it.
That no longer is the case. Murphy co-chairs the task force with Capital Region Senator George Amador and Robert Ort from outside Buffalo. He says additional forums are scheduled over the next few months, including on Long Island and in Dutchess County. Task force members will use information from stakeholders and experts during the forums to develop recommendations for legislative action.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Preservation League of New York State has placed a controversial rail-to-trail project in the Adirondacks supported by the state on its list of historic properties the group says must be saved. Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has the latest.
The Remsen Lake Placid Travel Corridor runs for 119 miles through the center of the Adirondacks. A 1996 management plan called for rail use to be developed along the entire route with parallel recreational trails where feasible. It specified that no action to eliminate rail should be taken at that time. In 2013, the DEC and the DOT proposed dividing the rail corridor into two segments and began gathering public input. The railroad would remain intact between Remsen and Tupper Lake and improved. 34 miles of rails between Tupper Lake and Lake Placid would be removed and converted to a multi-use recreational trail. The proposal has divided public opinion, and the arguments continue even after the Adirondack Park Agency ruled in February that the plan complies with the State Land Master Plan, allowing the DEC and DOT to move forward. Last week, the Preservation League of New York State issued its Seven to Save list. It's an annual designation of endangered historic resources that the League says must be preserved. The Adirondack Scenic Railroad and the 34 miles of track is one of the seven properties. Adirondack Architectural Heritage Executive Director Stephen Engelhart says his group and Historic Saranac Lake submitted the application making the case to put the railway on the list.
It's a National Register listed resource of tremendous importance and also size. We think it's the largest National Register site in the state by acreage. But perhaps more importantly, here we have the state taking an action that will have a big economic impact.
Adirondack Recreational Trail Advocates, or ARTA, founding director Tony Goodwin also created the Adirondack Ski Touring Council. He doesn't believe the Seven to Save listing will impact efforts to create the trail.
The DEC has already been in contact with the New York State Office of Recreation and Historic Preservation, and they don't seem to have any objections to this change. In reality, many other historic rail lines have been turned into rail trails without objection.
Goodwin hopes the DEC can begin hiring contractors to pull up the tracks in late fall.
We've been, you know, on this for quite a number of years, and the DEC, pretty much right from the start, was in favor of removing the rails, so they've been thinking about how they're going to implement this. I have personally sent letters to both Historic Saranac Lake and Adirondack Architectural Heritage with a description of how other rail trails have interpreted history and asked them to work with us now that it seems a given that the rails will be removed.
Engelhart believes the Preservation League's experience with public policy will make a difference, even though the state appears to have made up its mind regarding the 34-mile section of track. He believes it's not too late for the state to change course and create a compromise solution that both retains the railroad and creates trails along the corridor.
We believe that there is an option that allows for both the continued use of the railroad and the development of a trail system within the corridor that should make everybody happy if the trail advocates are really interested in a trail.
Adirondack Park Agency spokesman Keith McKeever told WAMC the agency's focus was to assure the plan was in compliance with the master plan, and it has no reaction to the Preservation League's Seven to Save listing of the railway.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1611. Or just listen on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.